Welcome to Spirits Podcast, Episode 7, Flood Special Edition. This is not just one myth from one society for you guys. It's a whole handful of myths from all continents, all different times, all different traditions, explaining something that apparently is very fundamental to human society: great floods and great destruction and exciting renewal.
You guys know Noah, but I don't think you guys know these other myths. We go from China, we go to Africa, we go to Europe.
Mesopotamia.
Mesoamerica. We go to Arizona. That's where the Hopi are, right?
Yes, we go across the land bridge from Asia to North America, folks. We're going all the way back and up to the present day to bring you flood myths from throughout the ages.
We'd like to thank everyone who's rated and reviewed us on iTunes. We really appreciate you guys going out there and taking some time to write us up a quick message. It's like super nice to read. Amanda and I were just giggling over our most recent one.
It warms the depths of our heart. It sends a flood of emotion over us.
That was terrible.
Bringing new listeners to the show really is the best way to support us. We also, of course, have a Patreon where we're putting all kinds of exciting show notes and sober reflections on our drunken selves. It is a lot of fun for us to put together our patron-only content every episode, so we'd love if more of you could join us over there.
You only need a donation of $3 or more to get some really awesome content.
Yes, and we hope that we'll see you over there. Today we are drinking cruiser cocktails in honor of our flood cruise ship type motif. Don't question it, just go with it. The best I can say for this cocktail is if you have coconut rum to get rid of and also some orange or pineapple juice, it's an acceptable method. Not our best cocktail, but if you check out our Patreon page, you can get a recipe card with these ingredients and instructions in case you want to, I don't know, play along. In the meantime, we hope you enjoy Spirits Podcast Episode 7, Flood Edition.
So Amanda and I, when we were like 9, 10, probably something like that, we were in the same like Catholic school religion class.
We were.
It's like the thing that we would go to after real school to get our communion classes, I guess.
Communion and then confirmation, right? It was Sunday school, but it was after school.
Yeah, it was time, weird. We didn't go to like a Catholic school or anything. We went to a normal school, and then the church was like 3 blocks away.
Yes, it was held at a Catholic school, mm-hmm. but we went to a public school and just went there after our normal class hours had ended for like an hour of religious instruction to get our communion and then confirmation. But most importantly, we were able to stop at the pizza parlor in between school and religious ed to get a slice of pizza.
And also like the like not 7-Eleven, but drugstore one where you can go get like
the suburban bodega.
Yes, the suburban
suburban bodega.
I can't. No. Okay. Not gonna happen.
Continuing.
Where you get like candy and shit before
candy, newspapers,
and like kind of sneak it into your mouth while you're trying to learn about like.
Oh yeah, there was no food or gum permitted in this Catholic school,
and yet.
So I specifically remember buying a messenger bag for myself at Limited 2.
Oh my god.
With my Christmas money.
Oh my god.
That had a strap in the, or rather, that had a pocket in the strap. That because they could tell if you were reaching into a bag for something, but they couldn't tell if you're reaching into your strap of your messenger bag. There's no pockets there normally. So you would draw out your box of Nerds or your Milky Way or something.
Well, you don't do box of Nerds. It's way too loud.
It's way too loud. You're
anyway,
right.
Anyway, the no, point
you
of the
unwrap
story
the Milky
being,
Way. Okay.
The point of this story being, Amanda, we'll talk about sneaky snack choices later. Mm-hmm. Was that we both kind of learned the story of Noah and the Ark together.
We did.
Yes. And the flood myth is like, you know, most people know the story of Noah and the Ark, right? Like, we can agree. We both kind of know.
Yes. Noah gets a premonition, builds a gigantic.
Whoa, okay.
Noah gets a dispatch from God.
Yes.
What are they? It's another synonym I'm not thinking about.
Yeah.
God delivers a prophecy unto Jonah.
Yes.
And
Jonah. Noah. No whales. We'll do whales later. So God brings a prophecy unto Noah. He says, you got to gather up all the animals and all your family.
Build a giant boat.
Because
I'm just inexplicably know how to do. It's fine.
Because I'm going to flood the earth.
Right. Exactly. Cleanse the earth and what's left at the end mm-hmm. is this kind of curated group of animals
yes.
that Noah has somehow, you know, miraculously and divinely fit into his boat.
It's like divine eugenics.
Probably he would call it a cleansing flood.
Yes.
But yes.
But basically the same concept.
Sure. God is pressing the reset button, as it were.
Yes. That's the story that we learned. But did you know, Amanda, that there's flood stories from, like, all different kinds of cultures?
I feel like I recall learning a little bit about Nile flood lore, you know, but I didn't know that there were great flood stories from other cultures.
Yeah, basically every culture has a flood story.
Hmm.
So we're going to talk a little bit about those today because they're interesting in where they're different, but also the fact that they're really, really similar.
Interesting.
And we're going to kind of see why that is and, you know, what people give reason to and shit like that. So
I'm in.
All right.
Let's get some metaphorical resonance cross culture.
So we're going to start like pretty close to like Abrahamic, like Middle Eastern kind of mm-hmm. thing. We're going to start with Mesopotamia.
Great. So love it. I did my like fifth grade ancient cultures report on Mesopotamia. Hell
yeah, because everyone knows Mesopotamia. The first real culture.
True.
So basically, if you look at like Mesopotamia's written history, it's broken down into like pre-flood
clay tablets because they use cuneiform. Oh!
Thank you for bringing up that sixth grade knowledge of Mesopotamia. Really appreciate it.
I'm so proud of that knowledge.
So basically, their history is broken up into pre-flood and post-flood.
Cool.
Their story of the flood is the tale of Ziusudra.
Cool.
Basically, it dates back to the 17th century BCE, which is actually before the Genesis flood myth.
That shit is far back.
Yeah, way, way far.
Like, wow.
Like, people were barely people
back. We had no language.
It wasn't a
thinking
thing.
About it takes us back to an animal state.
Yeah, no.
They'd like carbon date the clay tablets, probably, actually.
So in the tale of Ziusudra, the council of gods decides that they're going to send a flood to destroy mankind. Like, no real reason.
Okay, two questions.
Go ahead.
The gods have a council?
Yeah. It's like, okay, so you know how like Mount Olympus, we talked about the Greeks. You guys know the Greeks.
We know. We got it.
Yes.
We're good.
So there's like a bunch of people.
Yeah, but that's like a, you know, a patrimony, like a hierarchy. Okay. There's, you know.
Well, this one is more like, not democracy, because no one's like...
Just a panel or a round table?
It's a panel. It's a round table of gods. They're like in a meeting.
I really like that though. I like that idea. Like all the gods have their specialties. Mm. One of them is Ruth Bader Ginsburg and they come together.
I was going to say like, you know, they're discussing third quarter
earnings.
Earnings.
Yeah. Yep.
They're like, the humans aren't doing it for us. So they're like, we're going to restart.
Cool.
So.
Wait, I'm sorry. The second question is, what did humans do to merit this reset?
There's no real
Who
reason.
Knows?
It's a really patchy story. Like, a lot of the pieces are missing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. It was 3,000 years ago.
It was more than that.
3,500 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So, the god Enki, who's... Okay. He's the god of the underworld sea of fresh water.
Makes sense.
Like,
I'm
yeah,
there.
But yep. like, also, that's not really a thing in any other mythology. This is like super Mesopotamian.
Yeah,
they're like,
yeah.
Where do we get our fresh water from? Underground river.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he reaches out to this dude, Ziusudra, who is like the ruler of this major city in Mesopotamia.
A human dude.
A human dude.
Okay.
Yes. And so he goes like, listen, we're going to flood the earth.
Mm.
It's coming. And so he basically tells him he has to build a large boat.
Great. I'm seeing the resonances. Also, I'd like to point out that you said reach out, which is one of my favorite corporate phrases. And also, like, this god of the salty undersea.
No, fresh undersea.
The fresh undersea. I'm so sorry. Sent him a memo, essentially.
Yeah, basically. He was like, yeah, listen up. I'm going to send you an email. I'm not CCing any of the other gods.
No, it's one-to-one. Yes. No BCC.
So he does that.
No BCC under the sea. Oh!
Oh my God. I can't deal with you tonight.
I am my own best hype man.
You really are. So there's like a whole section that's lost about, he actually tells him how to build the boat.
Makes sense.
Which is crazy. But it's
right
gone now.
Because Noah was just left with, like, no instruction manual and a hammer.
Pretty much. So Ziusudra piles a bunch of people from his city into the boat. It gets tossed around by the waters of the flood. While they're, like, kind of chilling there, while they're, like, you know, floating on top of the flood and stuff, he sees the sun god Ulu. And Ulu is, like, you know, a big fucking deal on the council and shit like that.
Oh, sure. The sun is a big deal.
Right. So he prostrates himself. He sacrifices an ox and a sheep.
Cool.
And then the flood ends.
Nice.
Like, Ulu was like, hey, he, like, gave me an ox and a sheep, so I think we're good.
Yeah, we're even. That's a lot.
Yeah. So
sorry to be clear, the god or the human did the sacrificing?
The human did the sacrificing.
Okay. How did he note it? Or just like, it's just the god and you just do it.
Yeah. It's just like, okay. It's like if Zeus came in front of you and like, ourselves. Let me kill this ox for you right now. You guys didn't see that, but I made like a neck slashing and kind of thing.
He casually sawed off the neck of the goat or whatever. Fine. Yeah.
Whatever. So the flood ends. The people are saved. Ziusudra thanks the god, specifically on the sky god, because he's also a big deal. He's very like Zeus-esque. And a god called Enlil, who is the god of Lord Breath or Eternal Life.
That seems like a worthy thing to assign a god to.
I think so. So them being like, you know, you did good. You realized you were at fault. You sacrificed some stuff. You did a good job. They give him eternal life or
dope
breath eternal.
That makes total sense. So like a god is breathing into you a force that will animate you forever.
Kind of like how Adam got the life of God breathed into him, and that's how he became human.
Not as familiar with that part of Genesis, but yes, I believe you.
We're gonna talk about that at some point, I'm sure.
Dope.
So he then, you know, is eternal now, and he gets sent to this paradise garden, like super similar to Eden.
Dope.
Which was like, it was an actual city, but like the people who lived at southern Mesopotamia, it was in northern Mesopotamia, they're like, that's like a garden of fantasy and delight. And
right.
Like,
it's literally just 400 miles away.
It's so nice. So that's the Mesopotamia myth. You can kind of see where the biblical story like gets its kind of foundations its shape, from, stuff like that. So that's pretty cool. Also in that area, we have the Babylonian story.
Yeah.
So the Babylonian story is like probably out of all of them, the most similar to the Genesis story.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the one featuring Gilgamesh. And do you know who Gilgamesh is?
I've heard about him as a literary figure.
Yes. And that's who he is.
Yes. Okay.
So he's basically like this hero of Babylonian story. He like tries to reclaim death. He does like a bunch of stuff that like any mythological hero would do.
Mm-hmm.
But in this story, he's basically Noah. It's the same story, but they make a point of saying, like, oh, he saves all the animals, too. So, like, in the Mesopotamian one,
it was just humans.
It was just humans, except for, like, I guess they brought a couple of, like, livestock on to feed themselves.
Right. And that makes sense to me. Like, it's up to the gods to repopulate the fruits of the earth. Like, we, the humans, are going to save ourselves.
Yeah. Until we get to Gilgamesh, and they're like, you need to bring all these animals on.
And he's like, fuck.
Okay, I guess we can do that.
Fine.
That's fine, I guess. But basically the Genesis story, same concept, the getting into the boat, gods flood the earth. He like is sorry about stuff and then they stop flooding it.
Wait, so in the Noah version, does he repent and that stops the flood? I thought God was just like 40 days. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Come out the other side. You're already righteous.
Right. Pretty much. Noah's one like kind of sacrifices. He sends the dove out, I guess. And that's like it comes back.
Oh,
and
to sort of signal the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, we're good. We're
and
good.
And so in Gilgamesh, I'm sorry, in the Mesopotamian story.
Yeah.
Was a humankind like repenting for sins? Like why? Or did they just like correctly decide to sacrifice in the face of the sun god?
I think it's kind of super like, did you see the really bad, the Titans movie, Clash of the Titans with the, somewhat hot guy from Avatar, isn't it?
No, and I don't think so.
Play Zeus. No,
I don't think so.
So basically the whole concept is like the humans aren't worshiping us enough. They're not giving us, like, the praise that we deserve.
So let me show you our mighty power?
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
So that's kind of where they're at.
Okay, got it. Sorry.
So the next story we're going to talk about, we have a bunch of stories, because there are a shit ton of flood stories.
Bring it.
Hinduism.
I'm thirsty for these floods.
I know you. Oh, my fucking God.
Boom! I'm on a roll.
I was gonna like actually go along with that, but I'm like, nope, that's terrible. I refuse.
Wait, sorry. So just to round up the Babylonian myth.
Mm-hmm.
it's notable because it's just like Noah and there were animals included and that's that.
Yeah, and it was before the actual Genesis story. So, Hinduism. Several texts include a bunch of stories about a great flood, but the most, like, prominent story is the story of Matsya, who's a avatar of Vishnu, who's, like, the supreme god in Hinduism.
Yep.
And I'm sure we'll talk about Hinduism at some point, but it's his avatar, which is a certain, like, form of the main god, and it takes the form of a fish.
Cool.
You know, so he warns the first man, kind of like their version of Adam,
right?
Whose name is... way too on the nose, Manu.
Oh, Manu, of course, yeah.
So he warns him that there's the impending flood and that he should build a boat.
Shocker. A lot of pressure on this first man.
Like, this is just like,
hey, person, you're the first man. Also, we're going to flood your entire earth.
Learn how to build a boat, bitch.
Learn how to build a boat. Pushing you out of the nest. Welcome to life.
And kind of the important... difference between the Hinduism story and like all the others is that Matsya kind of is like, okay, listen, you're gonna be in a boat for a really long time and we're gonna destroy the earth. You know what you should do? Collect all the grain, all the different plants in the world. You should collect and bring on the boat with you.
Also, that's a thing that we have. We have seed banks that are in the Arctic or in the Antarctic, one of them, one of the poles of the earth. We do. We have facilities of...
I'm like, trying to remember which pole it is.
Yeah,
though.
No, I don't
know.
Or,
the North Pole?
I mean, it could... I think it is north. It could also be in like Canada or Alaska or somewhere really far, the Nordic countries. Anyway, point being, we have a, you know, very, very cold seed bank where if humanity were to go to shit, it might be in Iceland, actually. We have, you know, little samples of all of the... heirloom fruits and vegetables that we can.
And one of our favorite movies, Mad Max Fury Road,
it's true,
also has that kind of concept where she has the bag full of seeds and stuff to repopulate earth with. So the next one we're gonna go to is one of my favorites. Bet you didn't know that the Greeks had a flood story.
Yo,
my faves.
Back to the Greeks.
Yeah. So basically it's this idea that there were, like, different generations of humans, which, like, the Greeks kind of got right. Like, they're
like,
war.
Like, society, like, versions of societies.
Right.
Yeah.
So, basically, they're, like, the gods aren't happy with the bronze race of people.
Mm-hmm.
Zeus is being, like, hella racist against the bronze people. Like, don't do that. And this is a story told by Plato, so Plato is also being kind of racist against bronze people.
Classic Plato.
So they were constantly, like, making war and pissing off Zeus, like, just being douchebags and not worshipping enough, which is a common theme.
I'm sensing a theme, yeah.
So he punishes them by causing a flood because he's, like, the sky god. You know, he can
Makes
do whatever
sense.
The fuck he wants. So Prometheus.
Fire person.
Yes, he's always been a fan of humans. He's the one who gave us fire. He's the one who, like,
Dope.
Brought us out from being huddling, scared children.
Good one, Prometheus. We were cold. Thank you.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Also, meat tastes better now.
Sorry that you got your liver picked out by an eagle every single day because of it.
Oh, like, right. That's true.
Not super cool.
Literal worst. God, what are the Greeks doing all day that they had to, like...
the worst ways to get punished.
They had to, like, invent styles of Socratic dialogue and also terrible liver myths.
So, Prometheus... hearing what Zeus is going to do, tells his son, who's human, well, demigod, but like human, Deucalion, that he needs to build an ark.
So just saving his son.
Yeah.
So did he get punished for that? Or already getting his liver pecked out? Who knows?
It doesn't matter either way.
So what were the consequences of the flood?
Killed all of the Bronze Age humans.
Oh, and reset the thing.
Reset it. And that's what brought about like the Golden Age Hellenic...
Right, Alexander type thing.
The Greeks. Interesting. The real Greeks.
Also pretty racist.
Yeah, super, super racist. Not a fan of that one,
thanks,
Greeks. Sorry.
Plato.
Then we kind of get away from Europe a little bit, which is good.
Great, because what I did want to point out is this is all kind of around the, like, Indian Ocean and Mediterranean basin. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, like, that's where early societies were, obviously. The cradle, what is it called? The Fertile Crescent?
The Fertile Crescent.
There, the cradle of humanity, et cetera, et cetera. Not the cradle of aviation, which is an excellent museum in Westbury, Long Island.
And I worked there.
If you should ever find yourself with kids, something to do. Anyway, so it makes total sense. Like, they depend on seasonal flooding to, you know, make their farms fertile and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like, flooding is a...
big fucking deal.
Is a big fucking deal. And if it's wrong, there's serious consequences for all society. So it makes total sense. But where are we going outside of Europe?
We're going to Africa.
Excellent. Literal cradle of humanity.
Yes. So it's really interesting because a lot of the African myths are very similar, despite the fact that a bunch of tribes and civilizations have, like, kind of different twists on it, but mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about, like, the basic concept, but, like, we're going to talk about the Maasai version of the story. So, it, like you were saying, the rivers flood. It's not just, like, a giant flood. It's, mm-hmm. like, the rivers are specifically flooding. And so, in order to save the human race, the supreme god, which, like, you know, there's a lot of different mythology and different deities in Africa, but mm-hmm. there's always a concept of a supreme god, even
if it changes thousands up. Of tribes and languages, yeah. right?
So the supreme god tells two people to get into a ship. He tells them to take lots of seeds and lots of animals. Not all of them, just like, you know, the ones that they like.
Yep.
So the flood rises so high that it covers the mountains. Like, that's a really specific one.
Oh, wow,
it,
like, yeah.
straight up covers all the mountains.
That's quite an image, right?
Yeah, yeah. Seriously. The humans allow a dove, and a hawk loose. So the dove returns, but the hawk does not. So, like, basically it's like the dove was like, okay, so, like, things are cool. But the hawk is like, there's food out there. I'm gonna find it.
Oh, yeah. So that's really sweet. I like that.
It is cool, right? And it's, I mean, again, it's super similar to that Genesis myth. But that's, like, you know, it's not that the Genesis myth is, like, the correct one. It's just, like, it's the one that we know the best.
Right, you and I know the best. Yeah. And it's also kind of in our, you know, our cultural canon.
And so, switching up continents again, we're going to China.
Dope. East Asia, bring it.
So China probably has, like, the longest flood story.
In duration of the timeline of the story?
Yes.
Okay.
So, like, you know, we're used to the 40 days and 40 nights.
Yes.
The Chinese...
A one-time calamitous flood.
Right. The Chinese flood actually takes place over two generations.
Wow.
So,
ooh, I'm having an idea for a YA novel now. Like, do you know that there's this, fantasy series that was self-published on Amazon called Wool.
Okay.
It's the Silo series. And the whole idea, like the City of Ember novels, if you mm-hmm. recall those, is yes. like humanity has to live underground because something terrible happened, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. There are twists. It's actually a really great series.
Oh, no, it's really good.
Hugh Howey, I think, is the Wool author. And then the City of Ember series. Anyway, what I'm saying is, you know, What is the generation that was born and died in the flooded world? That's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to write about that.
It's crazy good.
So what does China have to say?
So basically it's like it's a big theme for them is like displacement because people had to, once the flooding happened, people had to leave their homes for the high hills and the mountains or like start living as tree people, like tree houses for the wind, like just hanging out in trees. Basically, the whole thing is, like, major rivers flooded, and then the kingdom tries to contain it. There was a prince. His name was Prince Gun. That's his name. It mm-hmm. wasn't like he had a gun, and they named him Prince Gun. Whatever. So he uses this idea of this, like, self-expanding soil called Shirong, which he steals from the supreme divinity.
So self-expanding, like kitty litter, like you toss a handful of salt and it becomes soil?
Yeah, kind of.
Type thing, right.
So he wants to use that to kind of like work the rivers and dams and stuff. You know, like make actual like walls that'll keep the rivers from flooding and stuff.
Oh, I see. So like a kind of like smart putty
yes.
to dam in the rivers.
Yes.
Cool.
So he tries to use that, but the supreme divinity finds out and he like knocks over all the dams and like punishes him and the flood continues.
I like how I said smart soil.
Yeah.
Like it's like a Wi-Fi enabled fridge.
Yeah.
Like a smart device.
Sure.
I like that idea that the soil is like, hey, palace, bad things.
What?
Circuitry doesn't mix well.
So from there, like a bunch of different people kind to try and like end the flood through acts of heroism. Like that's a really big focus. Like, oh, this person tried this and they saved this many people, but they're,
oh sure.
But overall they were unsuccessful.
That's really nice though. Like kind of individual, ultimately futile, but still noble human acts of self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
So basically none are successful until Gun's son comes in, Yu. And so Yu opens up the paths of the rivers and streams to the ocean to help them drain out. And
makes
he kind of gets this idea from the god Hebo, who's the god of the Yellow River, which is like a big river for like civilized China at that point.
Yes.
So he kind of makes
the Nile of the East, right, if you will. Yeah.
So he kind of makes him like a map. He's like, this is how the rivers go. Here's where the ocean is. This is what you have to do. And he was like, that's all dope. Right, thanks, bro.
That's like, also really cool as well. Like, you know, you can't work against nature. You can't build up walls to keep it in, but you can work with the topography, right? Like, you right. can, you know, give the river a natural outlet to do what it's meant to do. You can't mm-hmm. stop up the tide, but you can help it go somewhere better.
And there's like a whole thing where this is kind of the story of how they understand how to do like irrigation and stuff
dope.
Like that.
I love agriculture. So good job, China.
So
terrace farming.
So really, if you're looking at it, China has like the most realistic flood story, and like yes. also like the
this is a natural
like,
event.
This
right.
is a thing that happened, and we like got past it, and now we're better people for it.
I love that.
Isn't that like yeah. so great? So we're gonna jump continents again. We're going to North America.
Excellent.
So
the second greatest America.
Okay. We're going to go to, there's a bunch of different Native American myths. For this one, we're going to go to the Hopi tribe. The Native Americans have a bunch of different myths because there's so many different cultures tribes and stuff. Yeah. But these are the ones who kind of have the most specific flood story and mm-hmm. like maybe the longest one and kind of the most like...
I feel like the Hopi have a lot of water-based right. Lore.
Despite the fact that they lived in a desert.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. water was precious, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Basically, the whole story of the flood is that it leads to the fourth world. So the Hopi break down their history into the first world, the second world, the third world, the fourth world, which is the one we live in now.
Oh, they were sequential.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
But they're different like periods of time and different like...
Yes. Eras.
Different eras for the tribe.
Cool.
Basically, the god Tawa destroyed the third world with a great flood.
Mm-hmm.
Before it happens, though, Spider Grandmother, which is like the best name for any god ever.
I love that.
I love it.
Tell
it's
me
so
more.
Good. So she seals all the righteous people, kind of like the rapture.
The righteous meaning the good ones.
Yes.
Yes.
In hollow reeds.
Oh,
like giant hollow reeds, like just put all the people in there.
That's so cool. That's like a grain silo, but for a person.
Yes. Which they use as boats to float around during the flood.
That's awesome. Canoes.
Yeah. So it takes a while, but finally, like, all these people land on an island. So they get out of their like little
reed boats. Yeah.
And they look around, but all they see is like water everywhere else.
Right.
Then Spider Grandmother reappears to them. She says, look, these islands are stepping stones to the new world, and that you people can use it to sail east until they reach it.
Was this the Asia to America myth?
That's the assumption.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool? So cool.
So cool. So you really can kind of see them going from like China area and then taking the Polynesian islands all the way until America.
I was thinking up over the land bridge into Alaska and down.
Possibly. But like
either way,
if you see where the Hopi are and kind of like see the island layout, it kind of makes more sense for it to be Polynesian. But that's just my opinion. I am not a
I don't think they had an awareness
historian.
of the you know, continents of the West, though. In any case, the fact that they canonically actually human beings came over a land bridge from Africa up through East Asia into the North, you know, American yeah. continent. That is dope.
Isn't that cool as shit?
Good job, Hopi. Also, any Native or Indigenous listeners, we would love to hear about your mythology and tribe folklore, so please get in touch.
Yes. And we're going to talk about the last one, which
Great.
Is Mesoamerica.
Cool.
So scholars kind of have a weird, like, debate about the Mesoamerican thing, because there's like, arguments that, like, well, clearly when the Spanish came over, they brought their Genesis stories with them, and these were influenced by them.
Okay.
But others say, like, these are stories that have persisted way before the Columbian Exchange. But there's a couple of interesting different ones.
Cool.
So I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to start with, like, a super weird one, just because I thought it was, like, really interesting.
Bring it.
So,
after Spider-Gram, I don't know if he can top this, though.
Okay. So... A man and his dog are the sole survivors of the flood.
Excellent. Sounds like on the road.
The man goes hunting one day and comes back, and the dog has taken the shape of a woman.
Fine.
They repopulate the earth.
Okay. Okay.
So this weird, like, half dog lady and this guy.
Yeah, but also, like,
the
like, the, like, dude hero you know, dream of like my only companion is my dog. Oh, wait, it's a hot woman. No, it's everyone a hot lady. Wins. And by everyone, I mean the man.
Yes, pretty much.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
So the Aztecs have another story where it's basically human couple survives the flood.
Great.
This time they survived without God intervention by Excellent. Hiding out in a hollow vessel.
So smart.
They're smart basically until they start cooking fish because they need to eat. The gods smell the smoke in the cooking meat.
Oh, shit.
And then they get turned into either dogs or monkeys. It depends on the translation.
And then what happens to humans?
Nah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of a religious or mythological story where the gods have a sense of smell.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, God does in Genesis.
Has a sense of smell?
Yeah.
What happens?
He like, so if you look at the story of Cain and Abel, Abel is more favored because he makes meat sacrifices. And it says in the story, like, God likes the smell of burning meat.
Oh.
So like,
man.
Yeah. Genesis is weird because it's got two versions in it. It's got like the priestly version and the
fit for, you know, church consumption.
Right. And the Yahwist version. And one is more like God is omnipotent and like, you know, he's just a floating being made of light and energy. And then the other one is like God is like a dude, kind of like the like Zeus is a dude, like he walks around, he smells
has a body,
stuff, he like
stuff.
Gets on the ground to make Adam instead of just like snapping his fingers and then a human being there. So
wow, pulls Eve out of Adam from I have to we have to revisit the God smell at some point.
We might have to do some Genesis talk at some point too.
I like it.
All right, and then the last one is a Mayan story. So the Mayan gods tried to create creatures that would worship them. They do it like three different times and they're just not happy with the results.
And do humans exist or humans don't exist
No,
yet?
They're making creatures.
I see.
And then finally they come up with humans. And so they decide, okay, we're going to make these humans later. But first we got to destroy all our other beings.
The prototypes.
Who were all made of wood.
Okay, convenient.
Yeah.
Set them on fire?
Yeah. Well, no, flood.
As I said it, I thought, wait, Amanda, what is...
This is a flood story.
What is the thing that the other eight stories we've covered have in common?
Flood story.
It's water.
So, yeah. So, basically, it's always really interesting because it's like a select number of people always survive. Usually, there's God intervention in all of our flood stories. It's usually because they're like... righteous or favored.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's no one's like particularly like wily, like except for that one story where the human couple survived but then got turned into dogs.
Right.
Like no one's like, oh, there's a flood coming.
There's something coming.
Like,
let me
something's
help.
Happening.
Yeah.
I gotta do something about it. Like it's never really like that. It's like they need that intervention from
they're
the
told
gods
what to do.
Otherwise they're like idiots and they're gonna drown.
They rise to the occasion.
Yeah. And then like, you know,
get
it kinda
it?
Goes
it's about floating.
Yes.
Rise to the occasion.
And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about when we were talking about Kelpies and Selkies with like water representing like death, but also renewal and life.
Exactly.
And, you know, bringing it all together.
Destruction and
that newer, purer and cleaner world.
Yeah. Right. A big cleansing tide.
Yeah.
I love it.
Gotta love those. Oh, so basically from like a historical perspective, most historians can kind of like come to the agreement like, wow, all these myths have flood stories. There was probably a flood at some point.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
all of these cultures probably aren't making this shit up.
Yes. And like, you know, seasonal flooding is one thing, but certainly a calamitous flood event, you know, happening to all of these, you know, whatever you call them, ancient civilizations, foundational civilizations, it would make total sense that you know, fold that into myth.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I feel like this is something that we forget in this day and age. Like we talk about, you know, the coming eco-apocalypse, right? Like the you know, the global warming is going to ruin the world as we know it. Or I think maybe now that we have a longer view of our planet as not being eternal, you know, like we realize that planets are made and are consumed and stars, you know, are born and die. Like it's hard for us to think about there being phases to civilizations and histories being written and lost. But I think that these flood stories are sort of inherently optimistic, you know, that maybe there is something better coming after the flood, coming after the, you know, the calamitous event.
Like, finally, our world can start anew because we wiped out everything that was shitty about it.
Right. With every act of destruction, there is potential for renewal. Yeah.
Which I feel like a lot of apocalyptic movies kind of have. Like, once everything goes to shit, you kind of see how beautiful the world really is.
Absolutely. Year of the Flood by Margaret Atwood. Not quite optimistic, but a great read.
Yes.
I have to recommend it. Thanks, Jules.
No problem.
Spirits was created by Julia Schaffini and me, Amanda McLaughlin. It's edited by Eric Schneider with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Subscribe to Spirits on your preferred podcast app to make sure you never miss an episode. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr at Spirits Podcast.
On our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, you can sign up for exclusive content like behind-the-scenes photos, audio extras, director's commentary, blooper reels, and beautiful recipe cards with custom drink and snack pairings.
If you like the show, please share with your friends and leave us a review on iTunes. It really does help.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.